Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of the Scared to Dance podcast with me, your host, Paul Richards. Over the course of this series, I'll be talking to some of my favourite people about their musical passions past and present. These include people who have DJed at our club night, as well as those who have created our film nights. Today, I'm joined by Jason Williamson from Sleaford Mods. One of the most uncompromising voices in British music, he's a songwriter who turns everyday frustration into sharp, funny and brutally honest poetry. Since releasing their self-titled debut in 2007, Sleaford Mods have risen from cult outsiders to international recognition, breaking through the albums Austerity Dogs and Divide and Exit. Their later releases on Rough Trade, including 2017's English Tapas, have helped cement their global reputation. The duo have just released their new album, The Demise of Planet X. Boasting their most varied and expressive musical approach so far, The Demise of Planet X charts, critiques, and satirizes our times, while offering a universal cry of anger and release of energy that pushes against the encroaching cultural darkness. Hi, Jason. Welcome to the show.
Hello. How are you?
And how are you doing today?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well. I've just been listening to your new album. You've just released your new album, The Demise of Planet X. I understand the album was inspired by something you witnessed at a Midlands nightclub in the mid-2000s. What can you tell us about that and how did the album come about?
It wasn't so much that the album was based on what I witnessed at that club, and I think it was around, it was probably earlier than that, it must have been 2007. It occurred to me that today's present societal collective energy mirrored that of what I felt that time in the club. The club was a local club called the Quilted Llama that was in my hometown of Grantham, and I had moved back to my parents for a third time after falling into trouble with money, drugs and alcohol. And I couldn't keep things afloat. So I moved home and continued to take drugs and drink alcohol and have very little regard for anything. Whilst working at places, a local chicken factory, I worked for the little chef, and I was on the dole for some time. A lot of the early Sleaford stuff, pre-Andrew, was created around that period as well. Sort of songs were noted for, like Job Seeker and Double Diamond, which is a song that we've reintroduced into the new album, as people are aware, and they're probably listening to it now. So, yeah, the Quilted Llama was a nightclub, and it was a shithole, and it was full of people I went to school with. At one point, there was a porn star that used to frequent the place, and, it all felt a little bit like the end of the world. Here were people that I'd gone to school with I'd grown up with, and, life was full of wonder-ish. You know, we were young and incredibly naive and, full of beans as much as you could be as a working-class kid in the early 1980s. But it occurred to me that this period, 20 years later, 30 years later, was quite the opposite. And people had ended, life had ended, It was, people were going through all kinds of mental health issues, substance abuse problems, people I knew well, And you had this back set of pornography in the form of this porn actor guy, all of these things that just sneer us, And it occurred to me like that this was Armageddon. This was the end, So it just perfectly translated into how I'm looking at the world at the minute,
Yeah, so my interpretation was that Planet X in the title refers to modern day Britain. Do you think the album is a reaction to specific events or a more sort of general sense of collapse?
Well, it's actually Planet X refers to the world, really. I think, global politics has now become domestic politics. And, as regards, the last album, UK Grimm, was more concerned with domestic occurrences. This album talks about things on a global scale. But as I've said, the global politics has now become, kitchen sink disputes, it's right in front of your face. you can't get away from it. And I know that TV and projected images of war on TV is nothing new. You know, it's been around for decades. But for some reason, modern warfare and the way it's communicated feels a lot more closer to home.
I was reading that you said that the album represents a life lived under immense uncertainty, shaped by mass trauma. I was wondering if you could just expand on that a little bit.
Well, everything's uncertain at the minute, isn't it? You know, it's more so than what has been happening before that. And what I'm talking about is, particularly at home with the debate around COVID vaccinations, Brexit, the scourge of the Conservative government going into what people now did perceive as a disappointing centrist Labour government. Black Lives Matter, culture wars, the pointless argument around the trans community, etc. The list goes on. What it feels like that's happening now is that's all been eclipsed by this by the onset of war, by the onset of instability, of death. Now we're no longer being tossed around by political ideology or culture war. Or structural racism. We're now being thrown around by the prospect of terror, of murder, of invasions from another country. Do you know what I mean?
The album is very much a reflection of you commenting on what's going on now and what's happened in the last few years. What kind of headspace were you in specifically when you were making this record?
Pretty bad one, actually. I'd kind of had a bit of an existential crisis. I wasn't sure if my contributions were going to be any good anymore because I think I was sidestepped by by currencies in the world that that I wasn't too connected with and yet was expected to know all about. And I'm talking about October the 7th chiefly, and how that swept through the country and divided people completely and utterly in how they, in what opinions they had about it. Do you know what I mean? So it was, and also the invasion of Ukraine, let's not forget that. Along with this hangover of lockdown, of the fact that I don't think people have properly translated it, and people certainly don't talk about it. It's just looked at as some kind of mass international historic event, and yet that's it. That's where it ends, you know.
Well, how was the COVID period for you? Just personally speaking, I didn't work for 15 months because running events, you know, we were completely shut down. Right? So it was a pretty bleak period of my life. I agree with you. I think society, we're not quite ready to face the full effects of it yet. It's still a little bit too close for people to comprehend. And I kind of, look, everyone's, the impact of COVID affected people in different ways, which I'm conscious of. But I find it very surprising that we're still not quite there yet to really talk about it. It's almost as if like, oh, that really weird thing happened, didn't it? Oh, let's just move on and forget about it. So how did that affect you?
Well, the same way you really. I didn't work really for a good 15 months. We released an album, but that was more towards the end of COVID. So the material was gathered and recorded. And also towards the end of COVID as well, we did it in short space of time, about 3 weeks, I think. I didn't work. So we were obviously concerned that this was it. You know, I think that was for a lot of people across the board, wasn't it? That in itself, I think I then connected to the idea of anxiety a lot more and still have, you know, it's still not left my chest. As you can probably hear, you know, I've got a quite growly sort of talking voice, whereas before it wasn't like that. It was quite smooth like that, but now it's like that. I can't seem to get rid of that. Initially, I thought that was down to the amount of coffee that I drink, but it's got fuck all to do with coffee, really. It's the anxiety that lingers in the top of my chest. So, you know, these things are attributes from that, of this melting pot of A, we're under threat. B, there's no communication with anyone really face to face. Interpersonal communication went out the window, you know what I mean? Mm. And also there's this feeling of not being seen, of falling into obscurity and yet not being obscure at the same time. And I think the last point has especially fed into people's attitudes toward each other now. And, you know, the online community, well, it's not a community, is it? It's just people having a go at each other, has become a lot more vicious than, say, you know, the golden days of Twitter, where people were just having some playful pop at each other. Today, especially in my industry, there are bands that want to see your career go down fucking hill just because you haven't said something they want you to say about whatever, October the 7th chiefly. You know, this viciousness has connected itself to the outer reaches, and it seems like indefinitely, you know what I mean?
So with all that in mind, how do you think this record compares to UK Grimm? Does it feel angrier or more resigned or clearer to you?
I think it's more resigned. I think it's more, I don't know if the word laid back is right. I think it's more grown up. I've done a lot of growing up over the last 2 years. You know, I want to get to a point where I don't give a fuck what people think about me. And I think it's healthy to have some concern about what people think about you, because if not, then, you know, you'd go insane and you'd do horrible things to people. But it's like, my problem was, you know, being trounced on by fucking whoever and letting it carry around for days and days. I needed to understand this about myself, and I'm over that now. Do you know what I mean? So this all sounds like I'm making it about me, you know, because we're addressing things in the world where I can't even contemplate how people are going through certain things. But I think you have to make it about yourself initially before you can take it out to the outside world. Do you know what I mean? That's just how it is, you know.
And there are several collaborations on the album. There's Sue Tompkins from Life Without Buildings, Gwendoline Christie, Aldous Harding, Liam Bailey, Snowy, Big Special. How did all of these come about?
Just a lot of it was down to this time around with guests has been more about, okay, I can't sing this. I know somebody that can, particularly with Aldous Harding and Liam Bailey. I needed those voices, those sonics on the track to make it work. So in effect, they were almost like instruments, you know what I mean? As regards Gwendoline, Sue Tompkins, they were more feature-based. And that isn't to sound detrimental towards the other people. Of course, they're features as well. But, you know, they kind of almost fit in with the song like a strand of DNA that needs replacing, you know what I mean? Mm. Whereas, you know, Sue Tompkins and Gwendoline, they sit on top of the track and they are more, you know, it's more obvious that they are a complete and utter guest. Do you know what I mean? So it was a bit of half and half, really.
Was it particularly special working with Sue Tompkins? Are you a big fan of Life Without Buildings?
Yeah, I've just got off the phone with her, actually.
Oh.
No, I wasn't a fan, actually. Jeanette Lee from Rough Trade sort of suggested, look, we used to work with this band called Life Without Buildings, and we think Sue, the singer, might be a great collaborator. And so, and it went from there, really.
And did you have any expectations with certain artists?
No. The only expectation was that they would do it in about 10 minutes. And they did. All of them did it in about 10 to 15 minutes. I mean, probably, you know, all right, I'll put a tab of realism on there, probably about half an hour, you know what I mean? But the idea was to have the idea laid down for them already. And, you know, that's normally how we work. We've got something written. You know, there are occurrences where people come in with original material. Amy Taylor did when we collaborated with her, you know, to a certain degree. Tor Maris did a Billy No Mates. She had a verse there that she'd written, etc. So, but yeah, mostly on this one, mostly all of it was some, most of it anyway, was already written.
And do you really enjoy collaborating with people? Because obviously you have quite a history of that.
Yeah, it's hard work in the sense that you don't know these people. And it's a case of, you know, it can be quite, you know, it can be quite, you know, it can be quite nervy, you know, especially if they're, you know, particularly with people like Gwendolyn Christie, whose reputation precedes her. She is an absolute presence in the world of creativity. So, I wasn't nervous, actually. It's just like, it's quite awkward, isn't it? And again, taking this back to COVID, is that part of that? Or have I always been, you know, not very good at communicating with people? But or feel like I am anyway. But no, you know, obviously, me and Andrew have written these songs and these people come in and it's done very professionally. So, of course, we communicate well with people.
Is there anyone on the bucket list for you for the future?
No, not really. It's just whatever is going to fit the song.
Yeah.
And so we don't, it's usually a recipe for disaster if you think you're going to drag someone in because they're going to be good for the song and you haven't got anything written. I don't know, actually. I've not been in that situation, but I would imagine assumption can sometimes be quite disabling. Do you know what I mean?
I just want to talk about some of the specific tracks on the album. The profits from the single Megaton went to War Child. How important is it to you to support charities like that?
It's important when you know the money's going to people and it's actually helping. You know, War Child set up sort of areas where apparatus where they can help to sort of reintroduce children that have lost parents or have been displaced by war back into society. You know, a lot of these kids don't talk because the trauma and shock of what they've seen is too much, and it's important to try and nip it in the bud so that they can grow from these incidences of terror and, you know, try and get themselves back into society. And, you know, there's lots of kind of centres where kids are given these sort of apparatus and guidelines to, you know, to sort of hopefully find a little bit of normality out of what I imagine is something they're never going to shake off, you know.
And you work with the photographer Nick Woplington on the music video for Megaton. Can you give us a bit of background on how that came about?
Well, we knew Nick. Instagram, you know, we followed each other. And obviously his work goes without saying. Some of his photography, particularly to do with working class, you know, families and domestic settings, is second to none. It's very powerful. So we kind of asked him if he'd be up for some photographs initially, and it went from there, you know.
And I particularly like the opening track to the album, The Good Life. You worked with Ben Wheatley on the music video. What made him the director of choice for that song in particular?
It wasn't so much a director of choice for that song in particular, you know. We just wanted to work with him again. It just so happened that The Good Life was the next single coming up, do you know what I mean? And I mean, yeah, you know, and so that, and that's how it was. But you know, his work is peerless in lots of ways. You know, it's incredible. And yeah, why not? Fucking hell! I mean, you know, I know Ben a bit, and he's only an email away. So why the fuck not?
And is there any other directors that you'd like to work with in the future? Or again, is it just a bit like the collaborations? It's just like what comes up?
Whatever comes up, you know, in some respects, it's whoever's available as well. You know, we aren't the type of band that has got a big budget either. So, you know, people have to kind of be sympathetic to that as well, I guess.
You seem very open to working with people.
Yeah, totally. Without a doubt, it's fucking... it's the way it is now. I think, you know, collaborations aren't just, here's a guest. It's like getting someone in and they fucking change the band and then they go again. And you don't need to, you know, I don't care if they're there for the night on stage, you know, if they are great, if not, you know, I don't give a shit. It's like, I love, you know, Sleep with Mods has always been about, when I'm not bothered about that. It's about the song. You know, if people, it's been put to me that, you know, we've got that many guests on this next album, you know, how's it going to look live? I said, it's going to look great. It's going to look fantastic. And if you don't like it, you don't like it. You know what I mean?
And going back to the songs, I feel like some of the lyrics on this new album, obviously they've always been observational with you. These seem maybe a little bit more self-reflective than previous ones, maybe?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Again, you know, like I said earlier, this has been a learning curve for me. It's been also like a coming of age thing, you know, like I'm not the person I was 11 years ago, you know, but I kind of am. It's like, it's again navigating the noise around you in this industry. You know, and being okay with yourself, learning to like yourself. Don't like myself very much. And so, you know, these things are important, I think, for your well-being and for your output. You want every part of the machinery to be in conjunction with each other and working well, you know. And if you've got a lot of inconsistencies as regards how you see yourself, then that's problematic, you know.
So do you feel those external pressures to have a position on almost every matter, do you feel that really like weighs you down then?
It did do, but it fucking doesn't anymore, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't see why you should be held to account just because you can't reel off some powerful, profound monologue about something you don't know that much about. And also at the same time, because you don't know that much about it, or because you aren't representing an idea that people want you to be representing, that you're therefore somehow, adverse to it and don't care. It's like, what do people actually think other people do? Laugh at the news, you know. We've turned into big babies. The lot of us in this privileged country of England, you know, in the West in general, you know, there's just a lot of blaming other people because, you know, deep down we all know we can't do fuck all.
How does Andrew in the band feel about this? Does he take the same position as you?
Andrew's of a similar belief. You know, obviously both of us are, you know, we are completely adverse to whatever government is bombing other people. Just for the fuck of it, you know, the Israeli government currently is not good. It's not good at all. I would think you'd have to be a very severely limited person to believe otherwise. However, you know, we're not a band also that will centre ourselves in the image of a flag because it just talks about us. It doesn't talk about the flag. It doesn't talk about anything apart from yourself. You know, we're not fucking action men.
Do you think this album, just going on what you've said so far, perhaps for you represents a loss of patience?
But also like complete, you know, a disappointment all of the time. And also anger, absolute anger. But as we were talking about earlier, the anger somehow has tempered itself because I think it needed to. There's no good just slagging off individual people and saying they're wankers. What's the point, you know? It's almost cheesy now. It's like it goes away from the actual point. You know, the general consensus to the album is we are looking at people just arguing with themselves. And I think by naming individual people, particularly in my game, you will become a part of that. I mean, we are a part of that anyway, you know. Here I am, you know, critiquing other people, critiquing each other and I'm critiquing them. So it's just like goes around in fucking circles, doesn't it?
This is Clifford Mod's 13th album. Does making an album like this offer any release for you, or is it just documentation?
It's release and documentation. Do you know what I mean? You know, I like the fact it's got lots of holes. It's completely coarse. It's, you know, in some respects, completely unreasonable. In some respects, it's not studied at all. I don't give a shit, you know. It's a reaction. I think it's bona fide.
And does that keep you interested in making records at this stage of your career?
Yeah, because we can do what we want, really, you know, to a certain degree. I mean, we liaise with Rough Trade, with our manager, and we discuss problematic areas. You know, 3 years ago, it was like, well, sorry, three albums ago, it was like, did you ever think about collaborating with other people? No, I didn't. No, that's going to sound shit. But after a while, we thought, oh, we'll give it a go, you know.
And you used Abbey Road Studios for this album. How was that for you? It must have changed the engineering and the production from previous records.
I think it was a general just being in a different place, waking up in St. John's Wood, going for a coffee at 7 o'clock in the morning. Probably did more for us than the actual instruments around the studio. You know, all of these things are just enablers for us to exact ideas. And I think the idea was for me and Andrew to just move away from Nottingham and record somewhere else, just to see if it opened things up. I think also at the same time, Andrew was producing a lot more with me rather than engineering as well, because that was taking up too much of his time in the studio. And I think, you know, him being present with me has really changed the sound of it as well.
So do you think for future albums, you will look at maybe recording in different locations if it does give you that effect?
I think so. I think we need to push and we need to do things that feel that, at first, anyway, uncomfortable. I think, yeah, completely.
On this podcast, I like to ask people about their record collections growing up, because I think it gives the listener quite a good idea of, you know, the influences that may or may not bleed into Sleaford Mods. So what were the records that you were listening to when you were growing up in Grantham?
The records I was listening to chiefly were anything by The Jam, anything by The Meteors, King Kurt, the Tamla Motown, what else? Just stuff like that. And then from sort of 16 onwards, it was Public Enemy, an L Cool J. For 17, 18 onwards, it was Wonder Stuff, Stone Roses, and it went that way, really.
There's a few artists in there, The Jam, Public Enemy, there is a lot of cultural commentary. So do you think that's bled into your songwriting?
I think it's always more attractive when people are honest and relatable in a song. And I think social commentary is probably one of the best ways. You know, when people talk about their surroundings, it feels very close, even though you probably live 500 miles away, you know. So, you know, if people can articulate that in an interesting way, then yeah, definitely. I think, you know, the same goes for anyone from, you know, sort of Brooklyn or wherever in New York. If they're talking about it in an articulate way, you feel you kind of can connect to it.
Yeah. And if that's had an impact on you as a lyricist, do you think any of the artists that you've mentioned have had an impact on you as a performer on stage?
Yeah, all of them.
Yep.
You know, from Chuck D to Paul Weller to Nigel Lewis from the Meteors. Fucking hell, the list goes on. Do you know what I mean?
Would you ever want to work with any of those people?
No.
No,
I've no interest in that whatsoever. I just like listening to them.
Yeah. Why do you not have any interest?
Because I think, you know, you can be influenced by somebody, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to sound good on the same record as them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So when you were starting Sleaford Mods, why did that feel like the correct medium to express what you wanted to say?
I got bored, not bored, but frustrated with, you know, first chorus in the sense of four lines for each and then probably eight lines for a middle eight. And, you know, back to the first chorus, you know, there's not a lot you can... I find it hard to try and get out what I wanted to say in those. And I wasn't one of these songwriters that like singing about love. It's like, why? I'm not going to, you know, I tried that. It was pointless. So, you know, it occurred to me that when I started writing these long monologues, the spoken word was the correct vehicle, you know.
The last 10 years of the band, things have really taken off. Did you have any expectation whatsoever at the beginning?
Yeah, none, because I just didn't think it would go anywhere. There's just absolutely no way I thought this thing could work. It's like, even though it worked, it was like, taking it out to people was a different thing. But the only aim for us was we wanted respect in Nottingham, we wanted people to realise that we were doing something good, we got that initially and then it started growing,
So what was that like for you once it did such a grow in Nottingham and beyond? Did your expectations change at all?
I still couldn't believe it. It was like, I just wouldn't let myself. I just found it just bizarre. It was like, no, I was like, this is going to end soon. Obviously, this is just a flash in the pan. But no, it just kept going.
What do you think it was about the albums Austerity Dogs and Divided and Exit that made people really latch on?
I think it was a new way of doing music. It was a new way of singing. And I think, people caught on to the lyrics. By then I'd been doing Sleaf at Mods for about 5 years. Andrew joined about 2009, 10. And I was becoming quite skilled in writing. Some of those early lyrics were a bit crap, but, for the most part, they're really good. I don't think anyone's better than me, I'll be honest.
How do you think things changed when Andrew joined the band? Because you were working with someone else before that.
Yeah, it completely changed. It needed to. I was working with samples and it was obviously a shelf life with that because of clearance stuff and also loads of people had done the samples thing anyway. So, my thing when I met Andrew was make it sound like the Wu-Tang, make it sound like Two Lone Swordsmen. And that's where the heavy bass came in and the sparse beats,
And how did signing to Rough Trade change things? Obviously, the level just jumps up.
It changed things in the sense that we were introduced to the industry, whereas before, when we were on an independent label, we were quite sheltered. And so when we went to Rough Trade, it was like, fuck. And we were doing things in a larger scale. I'm here for it. That's the whole idea. I started music to get to that point. I'm not one of these purists. Fuck that.
So you enjoy being on a bigger label compared to a smaller one, by the sounds of it, despite the increased...
For the reach, Rough Trade is a bigger label, but they're still, at the end of the day, a punk label. They still have an indie sense of being. And they're still run by Jeff and Jeanette, the originals. So it's like, this is, really important, I think. Would we suit anywhere else? Probably. I've become more and more exposed to the way that the industry works on a business level. So, I'm not too adverse to that at all these days.
You've released two collections of lyrics so far. I particularly enjoyed the second one, which I was rereading in preparation for this interview. Is that something you'd like to do again with updated lyrics?
Yeah, probably. We'll see what happens in it, but yeah, why not get them out there? It's, I think they're good little things to have. If I was a fan of the band, I know I'd certainly be up for getting a copy, definitely.
Are there anyone else's books of lyrics that you have that you look at? I mean, I have a few in my collection, Scott Walker, Jarvis Cocker, etc.
At the minute, I haven't read any decent books. Well, I've got loads of decent books, but I just haven't read ever. I mean, from the start of the year, really, doing the album, then sort of recovering from the creative period. I get more relaxing and more enjoyment at the minute out of watching shit films.
So what shit films are you watching?
Oh, God, anything. I tried to watch Troll 2 last night. It was a bag of shit. So. Not very good at all.
So do you find you need to have like a big break then after the recording and writing of the album? You need to like...
You don't think about it because you just think, well, it's not like it's hard work, but it is hard work and you do need a break and... You don't get one, so to speak, because I've got kids, I'm married, and every day is adult day. So it's helped not gigging this year. So in some respects, I guess I have sort of sat back a little bit.
Well, you say you've sat back a little bit, but you've been doing quite a bit of acting lately.
Yes. Well, that was 2 years ago, Game.
Yeah,
the film Game, which is out on Invader Films now, if anybody's interested. It should be. It's really good. Yes, that was done 2 years ago, but it's obviously only just been released because these things take time, you know.
And how was that for you? You'd previously been in Peaky Blinders as well. So what was it like moving over into game in terms of a different...
Well, it was a lot better. Don't get me wrong, Peaky Blinders was good. You know, it was really good. I really did enjoy it. You know, this has been my first feature, full feature length. So it wasn't, you know, I was there for 2 weeks instead. I was at Peaky Blinders for a week, actually. So I was at this one for 2 weeks. And yeah, you know, it's completely not to be sniffed at. I really do enjoy it.
I was reading that you studied drama at school and you had some acting aspirations when you were younger. So is this kind of fulfilling that for you?
Completely, yeah. I've always wanted to do it, but it was just unrealistic 30 years ago because A, I was too young, B, I didn't have any money to go to drama schools, and I just wasn't dedicated to the cause. And I'm still not, you know, music's my number one thing, but if something comes along, then I'll audition for it, and if I get it, then I'll do it, you know.
And how did Peaky Blinders come along?
I just emailed Killian and that was it. So he really, you know, he knew Jeff Barrow, who has just produced Game. He's, you know, he owns Invader Films. And he knew Killian as a, you know, he'd worked with him in the past and we got talking about it. And, you know, he sort of had a little word and... And that was it. So it's not what you know as soon as you know, isn't it? That kind of shit.
So how do you know Killian?
Well, I just knew him from that, you know, and I emailed him and said, hello, mate, blah, blah, blah. And he was very, very receptive and gave me a part. And I tried to muscle in and get another part in the film, but he was having none of it. Do you know what I mean?
Do you know if he's a fan of Sleeper Mods?
Yeah, he loves it. Yeah, well, I don't know if he loves it, but he likes it, definitely.
That's a relief.
Of course.
You appeared on stage in Edge City, Monologues from the Street. How was that an experience for you?
Yeah, it's great. I love performing, as you know, but I've always wanted to do more theatre-based production. So that was kind of nearest thing I've done, since doing it at A-level, you know what I mean? So, yeah, I enjoyed it a lot.
And is being on stage something you'd love to do in the future?
Yeah, I would. I would like to do, you know, theatre productions, definitely.
We always ask guests if they can recommend an album that you've heard in the last 12 months. Is there anything in particular you'd like to shine a light on?
I would like to shine a light on, yes, yeah. I would like to shine a light on White Ladder by David Gray. I would like to shine a light on Eat It by Humble Pie. I would like to shine a light on Baby by Dijon. And what else? You know, the list goes on, actually. What else have I been listening to? Caius, the second and third album. Slow Burn, Amusing the Amazing. The Trials, actually, of Van Occupantha by Midlake is a classic album. I've been listening to Private Music by Deftones. I can't quite bring myself to enjoy Turnstile, though. I'm not sure. Yeah, so, but yeah, stuff like that, really.
And you've got some live dates coming up across Europe, Australia, New Zealand. How much are you looking forward to touring?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Do you like being out on the road, or do you find it?
I like it, yeah. It's where I earn my money, and I like travelling. It's seeing other people in their lives in a minute, in a motion in time that you'll never see again is really quite something, isn't it? So, yes, I do like travelling, yeah.
Is there anywhere new on the route for you?
There isn't, no. The same places, Australia, US, Europe, you know, but hey, I don't mind, you know, these places are full of absolute wonder.
And how do you feel like playing in the US at the moment?
I don't know how it'll be, you know, it'd be interesting. We're currently...
They're going to be checking your social media posts.
Well, fuck, this is the thing, isn't it? But I don't know if it's like, you know, online, it's just like, oh, fuck off. Yeah. You know, in reality, people largely don't give a fuck. As long as you've got the right paperwork, that's it, you know. So we'll see. It'd be interesting to see. We're currently applying for working visas at the minute. So yeah, we'll see.
And how much do you enjoy playing in Australia and New Zealand? It seems to be quite a good territory for you guys.
Brilliant. It's just as good as Europe is and the UK is for us, you know. So it's a real honour.
And I mean, that takes up a lot of this year with the new album and then going on the road. Is there anything else on the horizon in terms of acting?
No, nothing. You know, the game is like that. It's people just don't come knocking at your door because there's so many people to choose from. And also it's getting game into people's consciousness. Because it's an indie film and it's been funded solely by Invader Films, you know, there isn't any backing really at all. So you've got that hurdle as well to try and get it in front of people, you know.
What's next for Sleaford Mods? Have you started writing for another album, or is it on pause for now?
Pause, you know what I mean? See what happens. See how the land lies in another year, you know what I mean?
That sounds good to me. Thank you so much for your time today, Jason.
Thank you, Paul.
Thanks to Jason Williamson from Sleaford Mods for joining us on the show today. They're on tour in the UK and Ireland in February and March, and check out their fantastic new album, The Demise of Planet X. If you enjoyed the show, leave us a review and you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. I'll be back next week talking to Dry Cleaning about their brilliant new album, Secret Love. This podcast was produced at Third Floor Recording.